All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're taking a look at a case that I think you'll find really interesting.
Yeah, this one's a bit of a classic.
It is. It's a Massachusetts case from 1996, O'Brien v. New England Telephone and Telegraph Company.
Yeah.
But really what we're going to be looking at today is how something as simple as an employee handbook
right.
can actually create some pretty significant legal protections, and how even supervisors can find themselves on the hook, so to speak, for their actions.
Yeah.
So whether you're thinking about becoming a lawyer, going into management, or just want to understand the workplace a little bit better, this deep dive is for you. We've got some great source material, too. We've got, of course, like we always do, some excerpts from our guidance podcast. We've got a case brief. We've got a standard legal brief. And then we've even got something called a perplexity analysis.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of our own internal process that we use to kind of make sure we're hitting all the angles.
Yeah, it's a good way to see, like, what are the really interesting parts of this?
It is. It is. So let's dive in. We're going to start with a backstory here.
Okay, sounds good.
So we've got Mary O'Brien. She worked at NET, New England Telephone, for over 30 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
It is. It is. And then we've got Edwin Hurley Jr., who's her supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
And things kind of took a turn with him starting in 1984. Now, he became her supervisor earlier than that, but 84 seems to be when things really went south.
Okay.
Apparently, O'Brien, she successfully grieved a transfer that Hurley had initiated.
Yeah.
And, well, let's just say he didn't take it well. We're talking daily screaming, public humiliation, even withholding work assignments.
Yikes. Sounds like a pretty toxic environment.
It really does. Like, how do you even function in that kind of setting? I mean, what were the options for employees back then?
That's a good question, right? Like, what kind of recourse did they have? What would be the equivalent today?
I know. It's really interesting to think about how things have changed.
Yeah.
But anyway, this kind of behavior reportedly went on for several years.
Oh, wow.
It did. And then, 1989, things escalate.
Oh, no. What happened?
Well, O'Brien suspected Hurley of having an affair with a salesperson. And she suspected that maybe that salesperson was being given her work unfairly. So she made a series of anonymous hang-up calls.
Hang-up calls, like just calling and hanging up.
Yeah, you know, just like that.
Yeah.
Directed at Hurley, his home, and this salesperson she suspected.
Hmm, okay.
So, I mean, nowadays that's, I don't know, maybe not the best way to handle things.
Right. I mean, could even be illegal, right? Like harassment?
Exactly. And that's exactly what NET thought. They traced these calls back to O'Brien.
They were able to do that back then.
They were. They were. And they fired her.
Okay.
They cited violations of criminal laws related to harassment and, of course, the company's own code of conduct.
Yeah. Makes sense. But, you know, I'm guessing there's more to this story. It's not that straightforward.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah. This is where it gets really interesting, especially for all you future lawyers out there.
Okay, I'm all ears.
So O'Brien didn't just sue NET for wrongful termination. She also went after Hurley personally.
Wow, really? She sued her supervisor.
She did. And that's what sets up the two distinct legal battles that we're going to break down today.
That's pretty unique. So what were the main legal questions at play here?
Well, the court had to figure out first, did NET's personnel manual, their employee handbook, create a contract, like a real legally binding employment contract that protected O'Brien from being fired without just cause.
Okay, so we're talking about whether the handbook overrides what we call at-will employment.
Exactly. And just for anyone who might be new to this concept, at-will employment basically means an employer can fire someone for any reason or even no reason at all, as long as it's not discriminatory or illegal.
Right, right. So like in most states, you can be fired for wearing a purple shirt if your boss doesn't like purple.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But if the employee handbook created a contract, then things could be different.
Right. It could change the whole game.
Exactly. Now, the second question the court had to grapple with was about Hurley's behavior. Was it just bad management or did it actually cross a legal line?
Yeah. Like, was it just him being a jerk or was there something more serious going on?
Right. And specifically, they had to figure out if it qualified as tortious interference.
Ah, tortious interference. Now, that's a juicy legal term. Can you break that down for us a little?
Yeah, it can sound a bit intimidating. Basically, it's when someone intentionally and without a good reason does something to mess up a contract between two other parties.
Oh, okay. So in this case, the argument would be that Hurley's actions messed with O'Brien's employment contract with NET.
Exactly. And that interference led to her getting fired.
So the key here is that Hurley's actions were intentional and they were unjustified.
Right. Not just like a mistake or a misunderstanding. This was deliberate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm starting to see how this all connects.
So let's dig into that first legal battle.
Yeah.
The claim against Net, focusing on that employee handbook.
Right.
Now, as we mentioned, Massachusetts law, it recognizes that these personnel manuals, they can sometimes actually create contracts, these implied contracts.
Right, implied. So not a formal signed document, but the courts can see it as legally binding anyway.
Right. So imagine that. A company's own written policies creating a legal agreement.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful, right? It's not just empty words.
It isn't. So what are the things that courts look at to decide if a handbook is a contract or not?
Well, they look at the language, right? If it has specific terms, promises like fair treatment or procedures for discipline.
Okay, so clear, concrete statements, not just vague guidelines.
Yeah, and the other big thing is, if the manual says it's not a contract, that usually settles it.
Ah, so that disclaimer is important.
Very important. The idea is that these policies can create expectations for employees. Like, they should be able to rely on what the company puts in writing.
That makes sense. So in Net's case, their manual, it did have some language about fair treatment, and it outlined a specific grievance process.
Okay, so you'd think O'Brien would have a pretty strong argument, right? That she wasn't just an at-will employee and that they needed a good reason to fire her.
You would think so.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've kind of hinted at, her claim against Net didn't succeed.
Oh, so what happened? Why didn't the court side with her on that?
This is where it gets really interesting. The court basically said that O'Brien couldn't just cherry pick the parts of the manual that she liked.
Oh, I see. So she wanted the protection, but not the whole package.
That's kind of how the court saw it. The manual did say there was a grievance procedure,
mm-hmm.
you know, that employees could use if they were fired and thought it was wrong.
Right. So a way to challenge the decision.
Exactly. But O'Brien, after she was fired, she didn't actually file a grievance.
Oh, wow. So she skipped a crucial step.
She did. And the court said, look, if you're arguing that this manual is a contract, then you have to follow all of it, not just the parts that benefit you.
Hmm. So even though the handbook might have offered some protection by not following the procedure, she basically lost her claim against Net.
That's exactly what happened. And it really underscores how important it is to not just know your rights, but to follow the proper procedures. You can't just skip steps.
That's a huge takeaway for anyone out there, especially for future lawyers advising their clients. You have to dot your I's and cross your T's.
You really do. Okay, so let's move on to that second legal battle, the one against Hurley himself. The supervisor. Now, remember, the jury actually found him personally liable.
They did. So how did they reach that decision?
Well, it comes down to this idea of what a supervisor is allowed to do versus what Hurley actually did. Supervisors, they have a certain amount of authority. They have to manage their teams. But the jury decided that Hurley's actions, they went way beyond that.
Right. Like, there's a difference between being a tough boss and being abusive.
Exactly. The jury saw his behavior, the screaming, the humiliation, the withholding work, as malicious.
Not just unprofessional, but actually motivated by malice.
Right. And they thought it was basically a personal vendetta, especially after O'Brien had filed that grievance against him years before.
Wow. So he was holding a grudge.
It seems that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the jury didn't buy the idea that his actions were in any way good for Net's business.
Okay, so they saw it as purely personal, not work-related.
Right. And that intent, that malicious intent, that was key to finding him personally liable.
Okay, but how does that connect back to the tortious interference idea we talked about earlier?
Good question. Remember how tortious interference is about messing with a contract?
Right. Intentionally and without justification.
Well, the jury basically said that Hurley's actions, that pattern of abuse, it led to O'Brien doing the thing that got her fired.
Oh, I see. So by being so awful, he basically forced her hand, and that messed with her contract.
Exactly. Even though Net might have been within its rights to fire her for those calls, Hurley could still be held liable for creating the situation in the first place.
Hmm. So even if the employer's actions are legal, a third party, like a supervisor, can still be in trouble for their part in it.
That's a really important point. So let's just recap the court's decisions here. Net was not liable because of that procedural misstep with the grievance process, but Hurley, he was on the hook for damages.
Right. Two very different outcomes for the company and the individual.
Exactly. Can you just walk us through the logic behind that one more time?
Sure. So for Net, even if there was a contract because of the handbook, O'Brien didn't hold up her end of the bargain by following the procedure, so no dice. But for Hurley, the court agreed with the jury that his behavior, it was extreme, malicious, and it had nothing to do with his job. It was personal. And that was the basis for his liability.
Really highlights how individual actions can have separate consequences. Now, what about that issue with the attorney's fees? I know there was some back and forth about that.
Yeah, so initially, the trial court awarded O'Brien a pretty big sum to cover all her legal costs, both for the case against Nett and the case against Hurley.
Makes sense.
But then, on appeal, the court changed that.
Oh, why?
They said that Hurley should only have to pay for the legal fees related to the part of the case that O'Brien won. So just the tortious interference claim, not the breach of contract claim against Nett.
Okay, so they separated out the costs based on which claims were successful.
Right. So even though she had one big lawsuit, they treated the two claims as separate for the purposes of awarding those fees.
Makes sense. Now, for everyone listening, especially the law students out there, what are the big takeaways from O'Brien v. Nett? What should they really remember about this case?
I'd say there are three key things to keep in mind. First, know your employee handbook. And I don't just mean skim it. I mean really understand it and follow the procedures. Because if you don't, you could lose your rights even if you think you've been treated unfairly.
Right, like in O'Brien's case.
Exactly. Second, supervisors, they're not invincible. Just because they have some authority doesn't mean they can do whatever they want. If their actions are malicious and harm an employee, they can be held responsible.
So be a good manager, Soaks.
Yeah, basically. And the third takeaway, I think, is about the interplay between company policies and individual actions. An employee handbook can create a contract, but it doesn't automatically shield a company from liability if one of its employees does something wrong.
So it's complicated.
It can be, but this case really shows how it all fits together.
It does. So O'Brien v. New England Telephone and Telegraph Company, a 1996 case that still has a lot to teach us about the workplace and the law.
Yeah, it really does. And it raises some interesting questions about how these principles apply today.
It does. And I think that brings us to our final thought for all of you listening. Imagine if O'Brien had filed that grievance after she was fired. How do you think things might have turned out differently? What other arguments or options might have been available to her?
Yeah, could she have won against Nett? Would the damages against Hurley have been different? Something to think about.
It is, because this case really shows how one procedural misstep can have a huge impact on a legal outcome.
Absolutely. So as you continue your legal studies and move into your careers, remember O'Brien v. Nett. It's a case with valuable lessons for employees, employers, and legal professionals alike.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive today.
My pleasure. Always happy to dive into these fascinating cases.